Morning. Today's Daf Baba Basra is Samach Vav. We start today in Samach Hayam and Beis. We're going to start today with the Braisa, starting with the Ritzon HaRabbanan. It's about 10 lines from the Bam of the Amud. We're in the fourth paragraph of Baba Basra, Mochir Sabayis. We are realtors. We are talking now about what's included in the sale of a house. You sell a house. So what is included and what is excluded? So as we learned yesterday in the Mishnah, so really the most important thing in terms of the inclusion, what's included in the sale of the house, and just to take one quick step backwards, we are talking about where none of this was delineated. If there was clarity between the buyer and the seller in terms of what's included, so then obviously you follow what is clearly stated. But on a generic sale where I'm selling you a house and we're not clear in terms of the details of what is included and excluded, so the Mishnah says the most important thing is what is considered structurally connected to the house. It has to be mechubal karka. It has to be connected to the ground. The house is connected to the ground. It has to be something which is connected to the house, which is connected to the ground. So the door, for example, obviously including the sale. The key, oddly enough, is not including the sale. Because although the key is obviously important for the door, functionally speaking, it obviously has to do with the house. But structurally speaking, it's not part of the house. And so therefore, the key is not included in the sale. The roof, no, when we say roof, we mean rooftop. Meaning the usage of the top of the roof. That's
the roof itself
is part of the house. Right, and in fact, remember the Gemara the other day discussed where if the roof collapses and you had to build a new roof, so then the other owner no longer has usage because that's a new roof. He only has usage of the top of the original roof. Okay. So that's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah, in terms of what is included and what is excluded from the sale of the house. And the Gemara now quotes a Braisa. Now let's do the following for anticipation of this morning. Let's do the Braisa that we did yesterday, Tana Rabbanan. So I'm going to go up about another 5, 6, 7 lines on the Amud. I'm going to start in the beginning of the line, Tana Rabbanan. I know I did this with this yesterday, but it really is the beginning of the entire daf of today, so let's start off. Tana Rabbanan Mochir Sabayis. So when you sell a house, Machir Sadel, so it's a Nagar Vesaminol, so you're selling together with it the door, the bolt, and the lock. Avalo is a Maftech, but not the key. Machir Samachtesh is a Chakuka. If you sell a mortar that is bored out into the ground, so meaning it's part and parcel of the ground. Avalo is a Kvua. But if it's a mortar, however, that was put together away from the ground, even though it was hammered into the ground, that's not included. Machasi strobel avaloasa kelas. If you sell the strobel was that ring that's set around the around the mill, so that is something which again is connected to the ground and therefore it's part of the sale. But the kelis, the hopper, is not part of the ground and therefore not including the sale. Lo satonah velo sekirayim velo serichayim. Ovens, even though they are pretty big, but because they're not actually part and parcel of the ground, they're not including the sale. Rabbi Eliezer Omer called mechub lekarka rekakarka. Rabbi Eliezer in this brisa states very clearly that if something was connected to the ground, even though it was originally detached from the ground and then connected to the ground, it has the status of karka, and therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, all that's going to be included in the sale. Now, bizman sharmalo hu v'chol mash besocho. Now, in a scenario where you say it and everything and all its contents inside, everything is going to be sold. However, the pit, the cistern, and the annexed portion of the house are not including the sale. Okay. What we have now in this braisa introduced us is a seemingly a very basic machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer regarding those things which were originally detached. In other words, they were metultal, they were a movable item, they were fixed to the ground, and it sounds like from the braisa, what we have is a basic machlokas. According to the Chachamim, it's not considered mechubal karka. It's not considered connected to the ground. If something connected to the ground has to be built or carved into the ground. But something which was detached and eventually attached is not considered part of the ground. Masha'inkin, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if something is detached and then put into the ground, it's kavua, it's considered as if it's connected to the ground. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. With that stated now, let's continue in the Gemara. We're going to be discussing now a mikvah. When a person is tummy, has to tov on the mikvah in order to receive a tahara. That's the short of it. There's a much longer story in terms of the halacha, but the short of it is he has to tov on the mikvah. And the mikvah can be made of one, two things. A mikvah could either be a mayan. It could be a natural wellspring that emanates from the ground, that comes from the ground. And mayan, when it comes to wellspring, so the water does not have to be stationary. The water can be in motion. In fact, the definition of a mayan is that the water is in motion, and you tov on the mayan, and you're going to become tahor. Additional to that, there's also a mikvah. A mikvah is a collected body of rainwater. So if you have a hole in the ground, and in that hole in the ground you have a collected body of rainwater, so that is going to be a kosher mikvah, and that also create a tahara as well. If, let's say, you put the water into a kli, into a utensil, and then from there you shuffle it over into a pit, that's not going to be kosher. That's what's called mayim she'uvim, that's called drawn water. Drawn water cannot be used in order to make mei mikvah. Mei mikvah has to be naturally collected rainwater. Okay, that's the halacha as it relates to rainwater. So basically, here's the story. If you collect the water into a utensil, and from the utensil goes into a pit, that's no good. If, however, the water hits the ground, runs off the ground into a pit, that's fine. Meaning because it didn't go into a kli. So now basically what we're going to be discussing in the course of this brice is the following. Let's say I have a pipe. And the pipe takes the water and the rainwater and brings it into a pit. Is that going to be a kosher mikvah, yes or no? So the brice here is going to make a very basic distinction. And the brice writes, Tana Rabbanan. That if I have a pipe where first I hollow out the pipe, meaning step one, I make the pipe, and then I take the pipe and I put it into the ground, no good. Posel is a mikvah. Because first the pipe was to convert into a kli, then it was put into a ground, and once it's put into a ground, so it doesn't change the fact that it was a kli. Therefore, the water that goes into the pipe is considered mayim she'uvim, and then from the pipe it goes into the ground, it's still considered mayim she'uvim, the mikvah is no good. On the other hand, let's say you first take the wooden block, which you're going to make into a pipe, and you first put that into the ground. And then after it's in the ground, now you hollow out the wooden block, so that now becomes the pipe. So the Braisa says, that's good. Ain't a posel, a mikvah. Doesn't disqualify the mikvah. Meaning that the water that goes through it, meaning the rain's going to come down, the rain's going to go into that pipe, which was carved out after it was put into the ground. So step one, it was first put into the ground. Step two, it was then carved out. It was then hollowed out. So because it was hollowed out only after it was put into the ground, is not considered a kli. The water that goes through it is not considered mayim she'uvim. And therefore, when it runs off into a mikvah, it's going to be a kosher mikvah. That is the braisa. The problem, says the Gemara, is authorship. Who is the author of this braisa? Now, we already just learned the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer as it relates to a house. Rabbi Eliezer says that when something is detached and then you connect it to the ground, connection to the ground makes it part and parcel of the ground. And so the Gemara says, money, lo Rabbi Eliezer, lo Rabbanan. The author of this braisa, I'm confused. I simply don't know. Is the author of the braisa Rabbi Eliezer? Doesn't seem to be. And if the author of the braisa is Rabbanan, it doesn't seem to be as well. Now, where's the Rabbanan? Who's the Rabbanan? Hi, Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, now, which Rabbi Eliezer are we talking about? Which Chacham are we talking about? So you know, as we're learning now our Gemara, so we just saw side by side two Braisas. It seems to be pretty clear that the Rabbi Eliezer that we're describing is the Rabbi Eliezer that we learned about right here on our daf, or yesterday's daf. So the Gemara says, Elamer Rabbi Eliezer to buy, so maybe it's the Rabbi Eliezer vis-a-vis the sale of the house. But the Gemara says, no. In other words, that Rebbe Lazar doesn't really speak to this idea. Look, as it relates to the sale of the house, remember, what is a sale? It's nothing more than just simply an understanding between two parties. What we would call in halacha gemiras das. Right? An understanding. So it could very well be, says the Gemara, that over here, when it relates to something which was detached and then connected to the ground, it has absolutely nothing to do with the definition of what is considered connected to the ground, what isn't considered connected to the ground. It's just simply a function of when the seller sells what's in his mind and when the buyer buys what's in his mind. Although right now, frankly, we're only really focusing on the seller. What's in the seller's mind when he's selling? So as we already saw, Samach Dalet, Samach Hay, the last two Dapim of Shas, dealt with that question, machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, and we know it's a debate whether or not a mocher is selling buying yafar, buying ra. And the Gemara right now says basically that could really be the entire debate over here in our brisa regarding Rabbi Eliezer of something that was once detached and then connected to the ground. Is it part of the sale, yes or no? It has nothing to do with the definition of what is or what isn't considered part of the ground. It's just a question of what's the mindset of the seller. Rabbi Eliezer may in fact subscribe to Rabbi Akiva's viewpoint that when a mocher is selling, he's selling buying yafeh, he's very generous. I'm selling things that are part of the ground. Oh, it was once detached, but now I connect it to the ground. The way I view it, it's part of the sale. I'm very generous in my appraisal of what's going to be part of the sale. And the Chachamim on the other hand say no. Only those things which are part and parcel of the ground from origination, only those things are considered part of the sale. But something which was detached and then connected, a person doesn't sell that because a person doesn't sell Ba'an Yafeh. So really the truth of the matter is, the Gemara says, don't use our discussion of Baba Basra and the sale of the house as a point of reference in terms of defining what is considered part of the ground and what is not considered part of the ground. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to scrap that and we're going to move ahead. So Dilma Hainu Taima de Rebbe Lazar. So for the remainder of today's daf, what we're going to be doing is looking for a Rebbe Eliezer that describes and defines what is and what is not considered part and parcel of the ground. What's considered Mechubel HaKarka? So the Gemara says like this, Doma Hainu Tam to Rabbi Lazar Safar. No, I'm sorry. The Ella Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Eliezer de Kaveris Devarim. Three lines from the bottom of the Amud. So the Gemara says maybe it's Rabbi Lazar regarding his view on a beehive. Okay, now what is a beehive? A beehive is something that originally was not connected to the ground, but with the help of a team of bees, an army of bees, a swarm of bees, so they make a beehive. So it's something that originally was not connected to the ground, and then what the bees do is the bees make a hive that now is considered part of the ground. How is that beehive viewed in halacha? Is it karka or is it not karka? Well, we know Rabbi Eliezer has a very clear position on this question. Did not we learned in the Mishnah Kaveres Divarim, the beehive, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Hareuka Karka. So now he's going to make four halachic points as it relates to the beehive. Point number one is that it's considered ground. Now the other three points are all going to be contingent on the first point. The Rashbam says that the first point is coming to teach us that if I want to sell the beehive, so how do I sell the beehive? The way that I normally sell property. Property is sold bekesef shtar uvechazaka. When I'm selling a beehive, the method I'm going to sell it is kesef shtar uvechazaka. So point number one is that the way it's sold is that it's sold just like property sold. Point number two, kosrin alav prizbol, that we can write a prizbol based on the ownership of a beehive. What is going on over here? So let's take a couple minutes right now to take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam over here beautifully summarizes the idea of prizbol and why a beehive has any connection to a prizbol. The Rashbam starts on the bottom of Samech Hamed Beis. It's a long Rashbam, but it's really great in terms of just a good summary of prizbol and how the beehive connects. I'm looking at the Rashbam, last Rashbam in the Amud, Harei Kakarka. The first point of the Rashbam, which I already said over, is that, but I'll read it anyway. L'chol dar v'lios niknas because of v'sher v'chazak v'lichnos agaba metautlin. In terms of kinyanim, we're going to treat it like property. The method of which you acquired is money, document, or proprietary act, and also kinyan agav. If I'm buying a movable in conjunction with the beehive, well, since the beehive is karka, so therefore the movable comes along with it as well. Okay. Two, we're talking now about the prizbol. V'lichtov ala prizbol ki'ilu hi karka. We're going to treat the beehive like karka vis-a-vis prizbol didnam in Masech HaShviz beperek Acharon. So the Rashbam quotes the last chapter of Masech HaShviz. Ein kosrin prizbol ela ala karka. Here's a basic rule. We saw this back in Gittin. We're seeing it now right now as well. And that is that I can only write a prizbol for you only when the borrower has property. V'im ein lo. Now, what if the borrower does not have property? So the Mishnah says it's not a problem. You still have a chance to write a prizbol. Mizaket besoch sadeo. What you'll do is you'll just simply give him a piece of property so that now you can write him a prizbol. L'sham mefurish lefi shirah hilal. Now, in terms of what is a prizbol, so again, we all know, but the Rashbam here takes us basically step by step through what is a prizbol. What happened was, year of Shavuos. No lending going on, because we know that all loans are canceled at the end of the Shemitah year. So the lenders are thinking to themselves, I know the Torah says not to be scared, but it's really hard not to be scared. Meaning, I'm going to lend money, and at the end of the Shemitah year, the loan's going to be canceled, and I'm not going to get my loan back, and I'm scared, even though the Torah says not to. So, Shemishametes vayu ovrim amashikosov penyeh davar lavcha b'liyal. Now, the Torah says don't be scared, and lend. And the Torah basically encourages the lending, but humans are humans and people got scared. So, Amar Hillel v'hiskim pruzbol. Pruz, revach, kamo shehifrez amidosav, demaseches nida. The Rashbam tells us that pruzbol is a contraction of two words. The first word of the word pruzbol is pruz, which means profit. Revach. And bol is ashirim. And the word bol comes from the word wealthy. Kamo elu roshe bola osha b'Yehuda. Quoting the Gemara in Gittin. Klama revach la'ashirim. It's a way of basically making the wealthy rich. I don't want to get political, but certainly the definition of pruzbol favors one political direction over another. But anyway, shalo yafsidu shalem, so they shouldn't lose their money. Okay. So, utanan. Okay, so the etymology of the word pruzbol. Utanan gufashol pruzbol, and what is written in the pruzbol? Meaning, basically, the pruzbol is going to be a way to circumvent the cancellation of the loan. The loan is not going to be canceled because we're going to use the Hillel institution of pruzbol. Now, what is the language of the pruzbol? Utanan gufashol pruzbol marasrani lam ploni ufloni adayana shabemakam ploni shikol chov sheish liyetsa ploni, any obligation that I have outstanding against so and so shegbenu kol zman sheyertzeh, that I'm going to collect it anytime I want, v'adayanim chos memalav melamata, and now the judges sign on the bottom of the document, oh ha'edim, or the witnesses sign on the bottom, v'hilkach mishamasar shterosav lebeisim likvosam, and now what you're going to do is you're going to hand over the contract to the beisim, v'iyo lo kagave, and you're not collecting. In other words, basically what you're doing is you're transferring over the loan to beisim. And that circumvents the Torah's cancellation of the loan. And how does it circumvent it? The Rashbam goes on to explain, lo karina be lo yigos. Because what the Torah says is that you, the individual, have no right to demand the loan. The dayanim kamagbule. It is no longer you demanding the loan, it's now the court that's demanding the loan. The Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, and Beis Din has that ability to relinquish your loan and to hand it over to the Beis Din. Vahani mili, period. Not period, but semicolon. That is, so far, the Rashbam taking us through such good basic points. The institution of pruzbol, why was it instituted? The etymology of the word pruzbol, the mechanics in terms of how pruzbol works, and now we get to the detail of property. In order to be able to write a pruzbol, the borrower must own property. Why? The Rashbam goes on to explain. The reason why property is necessary in order to write up the pruzbol is because once the borrower has property, so then it's as if, now it's not the same, but it's ki'ilu, it's as if now the lender is holding on to collateral. And again, what the Torah wants us is not for the lender to go after to attack the borrower. The Torah says you can't press him. But if you're holding a mashkon in your hand, no need to press him, because in the event of a default of a loan, I got the mashkon. Now again, it's not a mashkon, it's not collateral, it's property, it's a lien against the property, but in this regard, it's tantamount, it's ki'ilu, like you have a mashkon. Shekom ha'shiyuchlu chachamim l'sakin k'dei shalu yinir in okrin davar min ha'tara hitzkinu. And the chachamim did this because basically what they wanted is, they wanted to give off as the appearance as if we are not just simply uprooting an Isser in the Torah. Because if you look at pruzbol at the simplest level, it's exactly what pruzbol is doing. Uprooting an Isser in the Torah. So the Chachamim said, let's try to... Chachamim have the right to circumvent because Hefker based in Hefker. But even after they have the right, they still want the optics to be that does not look like they're uprooting something in the Torah. So therefore, if the borrower has property, so and it's ki'ilu, it's as if now the lender is holding a mashkon, so therefore we're not violating the isser of lo yigos. Kenir hatam beinai, that says the Rashbam is the reason why I think it's necessary for the bar to have property. Umer Rebbe zekeni zatzal, and again, just continuing in the Rashbam, he says, and I quote my grandfather. Here, my grandfather taught me, shamati dainu time of the stam lova en regim lahavos elim ken yishlo karka, li shabi lamava. The Rashi gives an explanation, says the Rashbam, as he quotes his grandfather, and he says that, you know, when do people normally lend? People normally lend when the borrower has property. Because if the borrower doesn't have property, that's an unsecured loan. And who lends an unsecured loan? People do, but it's not normal. It's not shchiach. Uve most of the shchicha tekin rabbanan. Rashi says that if it's an unsecured loan and it was a loan against the person who does not have property, so then something which is not common, not usual, and the Chachamim did not institute prusbol for something which is uncommon. That's Rashi's explanation in terms of why it's necessary for the borrower to have property. So where do we stand right now? We have gone through the Rashbam. It took us nice step-by-step description of why prusbol was instituted, what the etymology of the word is, the mechanics of how prusbol works, and now the requirement that the borrower has to have property. He offers two explanations in terms of why should that be. His own explanation, so it looks a lot less like we're uprooting something from the Torah. He quotes his grandfather's explanation, because normal loans are done when the borrower has property, and prusbol as an institution was only instituted for something which is shchiach. The Asa Rabbi Elazar Lameimer. Now, with all that said and done, now we can finally understand our Gemara, where Rabbi Elazar says that, you know, if the bar has a beehive, so now on the, you know, on the checkpoints that you have to go over, can we write prusbol for such an individual? So we're going to check the box of yes, the bar does own property, because the beehive is considered property according to Rabbi Elazar.
But isn't a beehive in the ground? For this whole discussion?
It didn't start in the ground. In other words, it was connected to the ground.
It's in the ground, though, but so the guy owns the land around the beehive.
Let's assume he doesn't. If he does, then there's...
So if they own the land, what's the point of the whole beehive? He's got land.
No, so that's what I'm saying. So let's assume he doesn't have the land. He doesn't own the land. He just owns the beehive. And yet, according to Rabbi Elazar, that's considered property. Look, it's a chiddush, because the beehive didn't start in the ground, and it was only connected to the ground. And as far as the prusbol institution, it's not enough considered ground. So that we're going to write prusbol about it, so that's the chiddush. In other words, then think about it. From the malva standpoint, what's securing the loan? A beehive? Beehive, you could just simply pick up and run away with it. It's not such great security for the loan. Okay. That was halacha number two. Halacha number three, we're now on the very top of Samach Vav Amad Aleph, is Eina Mekabel Tumah Bim Kama. When the beehive is in its place, it's not subject to Tumah. And the reason why it's not subject to Tumah is Karka. And we know that Karka is impervious to Tumah. And finally, halacha number four, now, let's say on Shabbos you were to take honey from the beehive on Shabbos, you have violated an Isser Torah. The Isser Torah, it would be analogous to taking a plant and ripping it out of the ground on Shabbos. Oker davar migedulo, taking something and ripping it out from the place that where it grows. It's tolish. And therefore, you're going to be chayav karban chatas if you take the honey out of the ground. So basically, in four different ways, Rabbi Eliezer is saying and repeating the idea that a beehive is connected to the ground, even though it didn't start attached to the ground, even though it's something that came only afterwards and affixed to the ground. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says it's still considered a davar, it's considered karka. And in four different halachic ramifications, he basically spells out that it's karka. And the chachamim say, no, it's not like karka, which means that in terms of kinyanim, it's not enough to do kesef shtar chazaka. You have to do mashicha. You got to help the buyer. You have to do mashicha on the beehive. Vein kosher and allowed prusbol, and you can't write a prusbol. Mekabel as tumah, subject to tumah. Bim kamav v'harod demimene b'shabbos potter. And if I take honey out of the beehive on Shabbos, I'm going to be exempt. Meaning, sounds like it's still an Issur Darabanan, but I'm not violating an Issur Torah because it's not considered mechubal karka. Now, what do we have over here now? We have a brisa that brings down a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim in terms of how to view a beehive. Something that was attached from the ground, connected to the ground, is it considered karka? Rabbi Elazar says yes, and the Chachamim say no. So what bothers the Gemara now is as follows, it goes back to the mikvah. Again, the brisa by mikvah says that if I make the pipe and put it into the ground, it's still a kli. If I put it in the ground and carve it out after it's put into the ground, it's considered karka. And what bothers the Gemara is, well, who is that? It's not Rabbi Eliezer, not the Chachamim. Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, when something starts off the ground and put into the ground, it's considered karka. So if the author of that brisa previously is Rabbi Eliezer, then it should not make a difference at what point did I carve out the pipe. Whether I carved out the pipe before or after it was placed into the ground, once it's put into the ground, it should be considered karka, and this is what bothers the Gemara. We simply trying to put Rabbi Eliezer side by side, it's not a match. So the Gemara says, okay, it's not a match, but I'll tell you the beehive is different. Why is the beehive different? Gzeiras akasov. The Torah, not the Chumash, you'll see, it's a Navi, but the Torah puts a beehive in its own separate category. Hasam Kedama Rav Elazar, let me finish the point. Hasam Kedama Rav Elazar, Taima Dama Rav Elazar, my Taima de Rebbe Eliezer. The Amora Rav Elazar is now explaining the Svara behind Rebbe Eliezer as it relates to the beehive. Dechsiva, Itbolosa, Biyaros Adavash, and he dipped it into the beehive. This is regarding Shaul and Yohanan. Shaul made a cherim that nobody should eat that day. Yohanan didn't hear it. He ate from the beehive. Anyway, we are right now not interested in the context of the pasuk. We're just interested in the way the Navi describes the beehive. Yaros advash. What's the word yar mean? A forest. The beehive of the forest. And what the Navi is doing is giving us a halachic point to make. Just like by a forest, anytime I pluck something off the forest on Shabbos, I'm subject to the malacha of tolesh because it is connected to the ground. The same thing is true with honey, meaning when I have a beehive and it's connected to the ground, it's considered karka just like the yar is. So basically what the Gemara is saying is that you can't compare the two, because when it comes to the beehive, Rabbi Eliezer's source is a gzeiras hakasuf. It's its own independent category. Yeah, Danny.
Can only be made by a human, right? This was made by a bee, so it's not even a
clee. I definitely hear you, and I understand your point. But at the same time, however, because it didn't start in the ground, so therefore it's also not karka. Meaning, I agree with you. I mean, to call it a clee seems... right. It's not clee in the classic sense of tumah tahara, something that was fashioned by man. But it's also not karka. It's not something that started in the ground. Rabbi Eliezer's position is that even though it was not initially originating from the ground, but because it was attached to the ground, that's enough to be considered part of the ground. And now what the Gemara is saying is that's true, but that's simply an exception to the general rule.
How does the Yonatan case, the Rash tells you the Shabbat?
Because the Torah, when describing the beehive, calls it Ya'aros Devash. The word Yar in Hebrew means the forest. Tavash means a beehive. And the Navi is equating the two. Okay. So, we're going to now move along. Ella Rav Elazar Dadaf. So the Gemara says, fine. So it's a different Rav Elazar. Sorry, I keep saying Rav Elazar. It's a different Rabbi Eliezer. And it's based on a Mishnah in Kalim. The Mishnah here describes the following. Daf Shenachtomim Shekava Bekosa. We're talking about now a beam by the bakers that was fixed into the wall. Now, what's the purpose of this beam? So the Rashbam has a couple of explanations. The second explanation of the Rashbam, it's basically, it's when the baker presents his bread. So when to the customer. Right? No. That's... That may be the first pshat in the Rashbam. The second pshat in the Rashbam is the right. I'll read inside. V'li nira. It's his preferred pshat. Who daf shekavua b'kosel liten alav etzapas limkor kein shosim paltan shalano. Just like when you go to the baker nowadays, so he has a shelf in which he puts the bread on and shows off his bread. So back then, on the outside of the store, so that he would put a shelf and actually screwed into the wall of the building, and that's where he would put the bread and show it off to the people. And okay, Rabbi Lazar Metar v'Chachamim Metamim. So it's a shelf that was obviously originally detached, connected to the house. Is it considered part and parcel of the house? The Rabbi Lazar says yes, it is, and it's not subject to tumah. And the Chachamim say no, it's not. And the Chachamim says it is subject to tumah because since it started detached, it's considered a detached item. It's considered a kli. Now, an important question which we need to find out is this plank made out of metal or is it made out of wood? And that makes a very big difference. If it's made out of wood, it's what's called pshute kli eitz. And pshute kli eitz is not mekabel tuma. If it's made out of metal, so then it is mekabel tuma. So is this wood or is this metal? Right now we think it's wood. Later we're going to change our viewpoint. The Gemara is going to change our viewpoint. But right now we think it's made out of wood. And now, here comes the problem. Money. So the Gemara says, now, here's where we're stuck. Because remember, the entire starting point of this entire discussion is the pipe that's made for the water, where the water is going to run through the pipe and then go into the mikvah. And the Brisa says very clearly that if I first carve the pipe out and then put it into the ground, it's a kli. The water that goes through it is maim shuvim. The mikvah water, therefore, is pasul. If I first put it in the ground and then I carve it out, it's therefore not a kli. It's considered karka. And the water that goes through it is therefore not considered shuvim, and therefore the mikvah water is good. Now the Gemara says, well, look, what did we just learn over here regarding the daf, regarding this plank of the baker? The baker's plank was originally detached, connected to the wall of the house, and Rabbi Eliezer says it's mechubar lekarka, it's considered now part and parcel of the house. And the Chachamim say, no, even after it's connected, it's not considered part and parcel of the house. So now the Gemara says, now you understand the confusion, because the Brisa goes like neither of these positions. And I'm just going to reread the Gemara's point. Money. E Rabbi Eliezer afilu chakukul of a self kavu. Meaning, according to Rabbi Eliezer, once it's connected to the ground, it is considered now part of the ground. Whether you fashioned it before it was connected, whether you fashioned it after it was connected. Connection to the ground makes it karka. And so therefore the Brisa that regarding the mikvah is not going like Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that once something is a kli, it always is a kli, even if I fix it to the ground, or if I fix it to the house, which is connected to the ground, it's always going to be a kli. So now the Gemara says, here's where we're stuck. Because the Brisa regarding the pipe for the mikvah is not holding like Rabbi Eliezer, not holding like the Chachamim. And so therefore what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to try to align either Rabbi Eliezer or the Chachamim like that Mishnah regarding the mikvah. And here's the Gemara's first attempt. La'olam Rabbi Eliezer hi vishani pshutikli eit tuma d'rabbanan. So the Gemara says that really the author of that braisa is Rabbi Eliezer, who says that when you have something that was manufactured first into a kli and then put into the ground, it's still a kli. And therefore it's going to be posel as a mikvah. It still identifies as a kli, and therefore it's going to disqualify the mikvah. When it comes to the baker's plank, so why are we going to be more lenient? Meaning if we use that same model, that same construct, so then it should be that the baker's plank should also be something which is subject to tumah. And meanwhile, the Mishnah Kelim says it's not subject to tumah. So how do you understand that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how you understand that. We're talking about wood, I told you. Right now, our assumption going in is that it's a wood plank. Pshute kliyetz is not mekabel tumah on a Torah level. Under certain circumstances, the Gemara does not really formulate when. But under certain circumstances, it will be tumah on a derabbanan level. But because the tumah we're speaking about is a tumah derabbanan when it comes to the baker's plank, so therefore we're going to be a lot more makel. And therefore, once it's connected to the ground, even though it was fashioned beforehand, once it's connected to the ground, it's grounded. And therefore, it's not mekabel tumah. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what you're saying. By in contrast, you're saying that the case of the mikvah, we're talking about psul daraisa. Is that true? What are we talking about when it comes to the mikvah? We're talking about mayim sheuvim, drawn water. Is that a psul Torah or is that a psul derabanan? Well, if you're saying that the baker's plank is a psul derabanan, and you're contrasting that to the case of the mikvah, so clearly what you're saying by contrast is that the mayim sheuvim psul, it's a psul daraisa, not a psul derabanan. And the Gemara says, and I got a problem with that. Michlal deshiva daraisa. Certainly sounds like what you're saying is that drawn water is ipsul daraisa. By kamalan derabanan, the Gemara says, but that's not, it's just simply not the case. Time and time again, we continuously say that mayim sheuvim is a psul derabanan, not a psul daraisa. The ode,
and I think it's a psul derabanan only if it's after it's a mikvah already, no? As a measurement.
Stay tuned. I'm gonna touch on that topic. By Kamal and the Rabbanan. So that's issue number one. Va'od. And furthermore, Hamar Rav Yosi by Rabbi Chanina b'daf shel matachas machlokas. And on top of that, we went into the Mishnah and Kalim assuming that the baker's plank was a wooden plank. Gemara says, but that's not true. Meaning we have a Masorah, we have a tradition that the baker's plank is talking about a metal plank. So to say that the baker's plank is a midrabanan, is a tumah derabanan, it's not true because you went in assuming it was wood. It's not wood, it's metal. So now basically, here's what we get to do. Now you see what's happening right now. Basically, we're going to use now the same basic approach, but we're just going to shift our entire orientation. Now that we've established that the psul of Maim Shuvim is the psul of the rabanan, and the baker's plank in question is a metal plank, not a wooden plank, which is a tumah d'oraisa. So now we just shifted the entire orientation, and now we get to do is again make a distinction between the two, but now in the opposite direction. The plank in question is a tumah d'oraisa, therefore we're going to be more machmir. The maim she'uvim is the psul d'rabban, therefore we're going to be more makel. And the Gemara says, and I'm going to come back to the details in just a moment. I just want to flesh out the Gemara's answer. So the Gemara says, well, Olam Rabban, and he, there we go. So now what we're going to say is that really it's holding like the Chacham. Now, what's the Chacham's general position? Something made into a kli and then connected to the ground is never going to be grounded. It's still a kli. So when it comes to the baker's plank, the metal plank is a kli. It was made, before it was connected to the ground. Therefore, it's a kli. And even after I put it into the house and connect it to the house, connected to the bakery, it's still a kli. And therefore, it's going to be mekabel tumah. And as far as the mikvah is concerned, we are going to be more mekel when it comes to the mikvah. Why? Because we're only talking about maim shuvim, and therefore going to be more mekel. And that means then that even though the chachamim generally say once a kli, always a kli, and even though it was connected to the ground, it can't be grounded, but the chachamim, because maim shuvim is the psul derabanan, so therefore we're going to be a little bit more mekel, and therefore we're going to say that if the pipe was first put in the ground, even though it was carved out once into the ground, we're therefore going to be more makel and say that under those circumstances, because the maim shuvim psul is only a din derabanan, we therefore have the right to be more makel. We, meaning the chachamim, have the right to be more makel and say that the pipe first put into the ground and then hollowed out is not going to postal the mikvah.
Is that because you cannot have to preserve the rabbanan?
That or just simply because the Chachamim are, if they're going to legislate a din derabanan, they can also, carve out certain leniencies within the din derabanan. The Gemara says elsewhere, Heim Amru Vehem Amru. Meaning, once the legislation begins with the Chachamim, so they have the right to, put certain loopholes into that legislation. Okay. Let me just go back to a Rashbam on the previous Amud, Samach Vav Amud Aleph. So basically now, the entire challenge has been resolved. The Bryce, as it relates to the mikvah, making a distinction between whether the pipe was carved before versus after it was placed into the ground. You're right. It is not a fundamental position in terms of whether a kli can ever be grounded, yes or no. Meaning because the Bryce is clearly making a distinction between before and after it's put into the ground. And meanwhile, in terms of the other Mishnahs that we know, and specifically regarding the baker's plank, the baker's daf, so there, the positions are very fundamental. Either it can be grounded or it can't be grounded. So the Gemara says, okay, but in terms of a distinction, it's very simple. Maim Shuvim is only Dinder Rabbanan, so therefore we don't have to be so fundamental. But when it comes to the baker's plank, which is a metal kli, so the positions are going to be fundamental. Either a kli can be grounded or it cannot be grounded. Yes or no? The Gemara said very unequivocally that Maim Shuvim is a psul derabanan. The Rashbam, the Rashbam comments on this, and we're going to just take a look at the Rashbam quickly on the previous Amud. On the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Aleph, the Rashbam, Divra Maschel, Umatma Gemara, the Gemara wonders, Mechlal Deshiva Daraisa. And the Rashbam writes, the Midikam, Meshani Hachi, Shamina Debraisa Delda, Bipsul Shiva Daraisa, Mayiva Aloma Derabananhu. The Rashbam says that drawn water, meaning water first put into a kli and then into a mikvah, Kidamina Bezachas Yavamos. The Rashbam quotes the Gemara back in Yavamos, Shima Mikvah mem sa'ah. Let's say the mikvah was made up of already 40 sa'ah, which is the base amount of water for a kosher mikvah. Menasin sa'ah shuvim, menatol sa'ah kosher. So you take out you first put in a saw of drawn water and you remove a saw of rainwater, so the mikvah continues to be kosher. Ad kama, Rav Yochanan amar ad rubo, and Rav Yochanan says, and you can continue to do this until the majority of the mikvah. So, in other words, I'm just doing this to entertain myself. So, in the case of repeal and replace, I'm just for my own entertainment. So in that, sorry, a lot of physicians in the room. sensitive topic.
I'll try again.
So in other words, if you start with 40 and you take out one saw of the rainwater and you replace it with Maim Shuvim, that's fine. And that continues to be fine all the way till you get to 21 saw, meaning that and the mikvah will continuously be kosher, and only after that point in time is it possible, and even after then it's only a psul de rabbanan. Ad rubavayna time of the medaraisu would be in a mikvah mayim mechunasim lechachila below shiva min haTorah. You need collected rainwater without any drawn water. The itkish lamayan kedibrishos el, because as I mentioned in the beginning, and the Rashbam here spells it out. I only said it because I got it from the Rashbam, right? The Torah puts two different types of water sources side by side, the wellspring and the collected rainwater. So the afilu naflu basar achishuvim batla beruba, and even if shuvim goes into a kosher mikvah, but it becomes nullified amongst the rov. In nami kamekame bato ulal nami gabit sinor hamikvah haya asu kvar kahogen ve'achar kach kavusham sinor kidiktani poslas mikvah mechad aisha mikvah mikara hilkach psula derabbananu. Same thing with what we were discussing when we were talking about putting the pipe in the ground and allowing the rainwater to go into. What was that rainwater going into? The Rashbam says it was going into already kosher mikvah, and as it doesn't matter, meaning even if you have now continuous maim shuvim going into the kosher mikvah, it's going to be fine. And only when it becomes the majority, then and only then is it going to be a problem.
Isn't there any kind of the bittul as the main shuvim goes in? So a drop like that is mevatel.
Absolutely,
right?
Correct. That's what the Rashbam says. Kama bittul. Right. Every bit that comes in is going to become bittul.
If it's bittul there, like why is it that after 47 it dominates all of a sudden?
Right. Okay. That's more than a good question. So it's a very reasonable question. But just the idea, just the basic idea that when the starting point is a kosher mikvah and then you're introducing mayim shuvim, so it will eventually reach a point of psul, but even when it reaches a point of psul, that psul is a psul de rabbanan. That's not a psul min haTorah. In other words, your question, I'm not answering your question, I'm just articulating your question. Eventually the Chachamim say enough, meaning even though min haTorah kama bato, every little bit that comes in is going to become bato, but the Chachamim say that now when the majority of it is mayim shuvim, even though fundamentally the mikvah is still good, min haTorah is still mikvah still good, the Chachamim said too much mayim shuvim.
But min haTorah, there is no mayim shuvim. It's been bittled already, and there's no majority.
Acknowledging. I'm
acknowledging.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but logically, you know it's there. You know it's bittled.
Right.
It's bittled. That's what he says. Midrabbana. You understand, but that's what he says.
Midrabbana is actually.
Agreed. The Chachamim slapped the psul when the majority of it ends up becoming mayim shuvim. Okay,
so what is
again.
The consequence?
I think there are two conditions, not just one. One is which drop is going to be, but also majority. Look at the majority also. If the majority becomes
there,
after,
but
after,
even
there is no majority. No. Once the drop goes in,
right.
It
Ben,
identity.
Right.
Going to increase.
No, I understand your point, but Ben's right. Ultimately, Ben's right. Meaning, every drop that comes in is going to become bato, and then the mikvah is always going to be kosher.
Can't go back.
And then the chachamim slapped the ban, and when the majority of it is mayim shuvim. Why? Again, it's a worthwhile discussion. But they did. So but it's very important, by the way, and I'll mention it now, and you know, I encourage you to do more. If the mikvah originated with with water from a kli, meaning if it never was a kosher mikvah to begin with, and then it's only mayim shuvim, that's not a psul derabanan, that's a psul daraisa. That mikvah was never good, is never good. It's not, that's not a mikvah. The only psul derabanan mayim shuvim that we're talking about is when you started with a kosher mikvah, and then afterwards you're introducing mayim shuvim. Then. After a while, it becomes psul derabanan. But from the point of origination, if you're starting with a mei mikvah of only mayim shuvim, that's a psul daraisa. Okay, where does that bring us? It brings us. I wanted to do the next sugya, but anyway. But that brings us basically to the end of the Gemara's discussion. The mikvah. There's a distinction between whether or not the pipe is first put into the ground carved versus carved and then put into the ground. It's not a fundamental position. The Gemara notes that. Meaning the fundamental positions are either Rabbi Eliezer, where a kli can become grounded, or the Chachamim, which a kli can never be grounded. Those are the fundamental positions. We see that best in the Mishnah and Kalim. And then as far as how come the mikvah Braisa is not taking a fundamental position, the answer the Gemara says is because it's only talking about a psul derabanan, and therefore we don't have to, meaning the Chachamim allow us not to have to take a fundamental position.